The following program contains views and opinions that do not necessarily reflect those of KMRE staff or of the Spark Museum of Electrical Invention.
It's Cascadia News Now on KMRE and KAVZ. I'm Stephanie Contouris, and with me, my co-host Tim Johnson, Dave Willingham, and tonight, our special co-host, Mayor Kelly Linville. Welcome.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
Absolutely. We have tons to talk about, but a couple of important updates. First, I want to talk about the situation at Sarbanant and the protest and walkout and the workers in Sumas. As a reminder, Onesta Silva Ibarra was 28 years old. He died after likely being overworked and health issues ignored. The Seattle Times is reporting that LNI has opened an investigation into workplace safety, health inspection, and employment standards. There could be heavy fines. Meanwhile, from Latino advocacy, Maru Villalpando today said that sustaining current encampment is still happening. There's about 40 to 50 people there. They did get their paychecks. There was an issue with that last week, as we reported. And they are working with Columbia Legal Services. It's a long process because, according to Maru Villalpando, the company did not certify and or validate the visas. And according to Villalpando, it's on the employer to renew the visa. And they usually rely on contractors. But in the meantime, there are people who have been fired who cannot get back home. She says that they need right now small gas propane outdoor heaters for cold at night. If you're interested in keeping up to date or finding out how to be involved, you want to find on Facebook Community to Community Development. Just to let you know, I did also reach out to Sarbanant today, and they are not answering their phone. They do not have a voicemail, and so we were not able to get any feedback from them. You guys weren't here last week. Does anybody want to weigh in on the situation?
Well, I guess what I would say about it is that this is an under-recognized, under-commented upon part of our agricultural economy, is that we have people who come into this, migrant workers, guest workers, come into the community to pick the produce of Whatcom County. It helps keep costs down. They're willing to work. They're the hardest workers I've ever seen in my life. They work extremely hard, and this shines a light, I think, on the precariousness of what it means to be a guest worker in the agricultural community.
I think I'd like to just go along with what Tim just said about the workers, because I view agriculture as a security that we need to keep, and the people that pick our crops are the people that keep us fed. Now you might be able to go to the grocery store, at some time you might not be able to. I also put in a strong thank you to our police department. I know there was some controversy about the Bellingham Police Department, but they stepped in because they were called.
Even though it was not in their jurisdiction.
Yes, because they were called. And they wanted to make sure that these people got their checks, because they were sent off without their checks. And so they supported them going back and getting their checks so then they could go where they wanted to go. I'm glad there's a camp. I'm glad there's a place for them to be. And I certainly like the fact that you're letting us know what we can do to help.
You know, in a better world, this would be an opportunity for us to really take a look at these visa programs like the H-1A or the H-1B and the H-2A, where people come to this country to work for a period of time and they are entirely dependent on their employer or a contractor hired by that employer to manage the paperwork, to get everything right, to help them get home. And it is really kind of a weird indentured system that is really open to exploitation. And we don't have all of the facts on what's going on here, but it looks a lot like that some of that was happening. And I'm sorry that we have the climate that we do and we're not able to better help the people that we're bringing in here to do work.
Well, particularly in a situation where people walked out in protest over a young man who died. And it was a situation, again, where it was 90 degrees in Sumas. We had horrific haze and smoke because of the BC wildfires. And it was a confluence of events that were horrific that I, as a privileged person, was freaking out about the smoke and the haze, and I never thought about the farm workers. I'm going to say that was not my first thought. And what a horrific way to be thoughtful of it. On the other hand, I'm not the owner of a farm, and I think that you have some really strong responsibilities to take care of people and to treat them honestly, and you should be able to walk out and protest without being fired. That's what I thought this country was about.
Right, and that's, you know, exactly it. If you are fired while you're in the country under one of these programs, you are stuck in a country you are not allowed to stay in, and you have no means of getting yourself home. It's really cruel, and it's terrible the way that we allow these people to be treated.
And we have asked Maru and Rosalinda Guillen to come on next week. We are keeping our fingers crossed. They're going to do their best to be here. Of course, their number one priority is dealing with the situation on the ground. And we will keep you updated as things develop, hopefully in a better way. Moving on, almost all of us should have heard about the horrific events that happened in Charlottesville, North Carolina, and the protests and the death and the hate groups. It was followed by another clash in Seattle. A pro-Trump hate group clashed with counter-protesters. Solidarity Against Hate organized it, and that was the very next day. And I want to read you what King County Executive Del Constantine said in the wake of the Seattle clashes. To the white supremacists and fascists who gathered today under the false pretense of patriotism, the day after the violence that a similar group sparked in Charlottesville, I have a message to share on behalf of the people of King County. We fought a civil war against slavery, and you lost. We fought a world war against fascism, and you lost. Today, we stand united against the hateful rhetoric that you have brought to our community, and you will lose again. Again, that was King County Executive Dow Constantine in response to what happened in Seattle. Because we have our own mayor here, I'd like to ask you and put you on the spot and see if you have any words for that kind of hate protest.
No. I mean, it leaves me speechless that in this day and age, we have people maligning people because of their religion, their culture, their ethnicity, whatever, publicly in a large community here. And I have to tell you, I take this really personally, partially because when I was a legislator, and this is way back in 1993, my first exposure to that kind of hate was a cross burning at a migrant worker camp in Whatcom County. And the unity of the community, all law enforcement throughout the county, all elected officials, an extreme number of community members marched from High Notes Corner to the camp, and we were standing there going through the feelings that everybody was having about it, and a car drove by. And this car had two young gentlemen in it. Yeah, I know you're looking at me funny. They weren't gentlemen. And they yelled.
It's just that there were quotes around that word.
I know. It was my my eyes. But they drove by with all this law enforcement standing right there, all these people, and they yelled, "Spanish explicative lover." And, of course, everyone was a little shocked. And then we stopped, and then we went on with the speeches, and there was no reaction, which I thought at the time was good. Don't give them the airtime. Because they didn't get the airtime, they came back by and said the same thing. And every single law enforcement person got out, and jumped in their car and chased them down the road. Now, what could they do? It's freedom of speech. But it wasn't acceptable. It wasn't, it was completely inappropriate. And I'm sure that they heard about it. But the truth is, that is one of the tenets that our country's built on. It was an awful, horrible situation. And yet, here we are again today, facing that, but much worse, because our president goes along with it.
Right. And Mayor Kelly, I'm very glad to have you on the air today, because you're somebody that understands this. The King County Executive understands this. You're not only the head of the government as the mayor of Bellingham, but you're also the representative voice of Bellingham. And there comes a moment when you're called upon to say something to unite and to heal and to compel people to move forward and to guide them. And I think that what's really shocking about a lot of the dialogue that's been going on is that, you know, the national head of state and the national spokesperson for the American people has been negligent, I guess that's a kind word of saying it, about doing the kinds of things that when Stephanie read the statement from Dow Constantine, when you've spoken now, it's a moment where a leader needs to step up and show leadership and direction to a people.
Well, I hear what you're saying. That cross-burning, by the way, was in 1996. The Whatcom Human Rights Task Force was formed in response to that cross-burning. And Damani Johnson was on the original steering committee. Paul DeArmond, who was a tracker and fighter of hate crimes in our county, was on that. And the whole community, as you talked about, came together, and the Joining Hands Against Hate campaign, which you can still see some evidence of, that was a strong response. But when Dow Constantine says this, I want to ask you, we've had a national leader who has been namby-pamby and basically tried to equate fascist Nazis with people who were rising up against hate and saying, oh, there's problems on both sides. Then we have this really strong statement from Dow Constantine. I don't want you to appear to say, well, freedom of speech, and I want to give you that opportunity. So now you're a leader of Bellingham. So what do we accept that? Do we tolerate that?
Of course we don't accept it and tolerate it. I was meaning to say, when the officers chased these people who had said that horrible thing, when they caught them, there really wasn't anything they could legally do to them. So what we need to do is just, with our actions, demonstrate why this is not okay in our community. And I think our in general, in the city of Bellingham, there is a lot of tolerance. My kids have told me I'm the most tolerant people they know, and I don't know person they know, and I don't know if they exactly meant it as a great big compliment, but it was a compliment to me, because I look at people and I see them as people, not individuals of that are different than me. I see people that, and I think they're the same as I am. The thing with the national level, and I don't think the outrage can be strong enough. There is a group of people who I believe our president thinks are his base. We're all involved in politics here. We know what base means. Base means the people that are going to vote for you no matter what. As Donald Trump said, the people that are going to vote for him even if he went out in the street and shot someone. I am frightened that facts don't mean anything anymore, and that when someone says something horrible, that a group of people will think that whatever you say is okay. And I look at his family, and I wonder how his family, two of whom are Jewish, can listen to that and think it's all right. It's not all right.
Right. And I guess that was the point I was trying to make, is there is a duality. When you're the mayor of Bellingham, you have to support the rights of all people to speak their minds. Under the First Amendment, we have a right to gather, to express ourselves, et cetera, et cetera. But there's also this other role, and it's the role that's missing at the national level right now, which is the moral voice of authority, that even though you have the right to say that, doesn't make it right, doesn't make it correct, and it's wrong, actually, for you to be expressing the things that you are expressing. I respect your right to say those things, but I also, I'm going to enforce my right to say that that's wrong.
So like Montana, would you believe or would you support a Not in Our Town movement?
Well, first of all, Stephanie, explain to me what that is.
It was a town in Montana in a very similar response to a Nazi march. A bunch of people came together, and the entire town came together, and they said, this cannot happen in our town. And they took a strong stand that it was not welcome. And I don't know, how do you walk that balance? Okay, like Tim's saying, freedom of speech is freedom of speech. So can you, as the mayor, say that hate is not welcome?
Well, of course we can say hate is not welcome, and I'll sit here right now and say hate is not welcome in our community. And the thing that I am happy about in living in the community that I do live in is that I think that most people in our community would band together and say hate is not welcome in our community.
Well, I think that kind of touches on one of the kind of exciting things about what's happening, in addition to the, you know, being reminded of this rot that's been in this country since the beginning and, you know, written into our Constitution, and, you know, we had to fight a gigantic war about it. But there's also the other side of that. When you read Dow Constantine's statement, it sounded a lot like the same statement that Jay Inslee made and the same statement that Dave Reichert made. And this seems like an opportunity when we've for years been, you know, playing a lot of silly political games and getting caught up in absurdities like we're going to talk about later with the state legislature, where we're playing these stupid partisan nonsense games. This is an opportunity for us to stand together. You know, this is a place where I can feel solidarity with Dave Reichert, where I can feel solidarity with other national leaders that I necessarily wouldn't in the past. And I think that hopefully this is an opportunity that people will use to come together.
Yeah, and I think that that's a really great point. And when you're elected, Kelly, to be the mayor of Bellingham, suddenly your base is the city of Bellingham. When you're elected to be the president of the United States, suddenly, magically, your base is the American people.
Or should be.
I was going to say, there's a different thing with a political base and who you represent. And when you're an elected official, you represent the people.
So, speaking of the people and speaking of Bellingham, we've talked about Charlottesville, we've talked about Seattle, but there have been some events in our own backyard, as we were talking about the cross-burning of 1996, but we're talking about as recently as yesterday. First, I want to let you know about the bridge in Ferndale that had some hate stuff sprayed on it in Ferndale. It was just this weekend. And I don't know if you guys heard about that, but it was reported and it was erased very quickly. But it was hate graffiti on the train overhang bridge in Ferndale. And then yesterday, the owner of Leaf and Ladle reported on Facebook, and I did call her. Her name is Linda Mellon, and Leaf and Ladle's on State Street. And she had reported on Facebook, and she told me swastikas and hateful words on a bathroom chalkboard. She found it yesterday afternoon. She was horrified. She was shocked. And she immediately said on Facebook, I'm not going to beat around the bush here. People who preach hate are not allowed in our restaurant. People who think hate speech is their right are not allowed in our restaurant. And consider Leaf and Ladle a zero tolerance zone. We don't want your money. That was owner Linda Mellem, who had swastikas and hate graffiti on her bathroom wall yesterday.
And I guess what I would say about that is, you know, the First Amendment we talk about, that only involves public space, and it involves government response to it. When you're a private business owner, you have the right to establish certain decorum and attitudes and everything else you want. I mean, that's so we have a public space in this country, and we have private space in this country.
Yeah, and I'm going to temper my last statement a little bit about how excited I was and point out that, you know, and I made this point over the weekend too, a couple of years ago, the hacker quote unquote group Anonymous had a campaign where they were outing KKK members, and they called it Hoods Off, and they were getting their personal information and posting them, this is where they work, this is their family, all of this, to kind of bring them out of the shadows. But today, they're not in the shadows anymore. They feel emboldened. And so we're going to see things like this, and I think that keeping a consistent response to it is going to be a challenge. It's going to be hard to keep being outraged about the same thing happening over and over again. And I really commend the ownership over at Leaf and Ladle for stepping up and being so vocal.
And I was formerly involved with Hillel on campus, which is the Jewish group on campus, and there was an anti-Semitic task force formed because of so many repeated incidents that don't get reported. There was a headless doll with a swastika on it late last year. There was a young woman student's dorm room that was repeatedly harassed. And so this is, it's easy for some people maybe who are not directly impacted to dismiss this. And I think that that's one point that I really want to make sure that we hammer home. This is not just idle tagging on a train. This is not just idle threats. These words are more than hurtful. They are threatening and they escalate to violence. It's very important that we say that. Conversely, and Mayor Kelly, I'm so glad you're on today, there are people who feel that the strong words that Dave is alluding to and the things that we've been talking about are tokens. And in our city, we've had a couple of big incidents that people are hoping that our city will stand forward as being more than just giving rhetoric. One of the things came up on Monday night was about the picket bridge. I have seen that your name is on a list of people to write to, and I'm sure you'll be getting letters about it. But you were there at City Council. I know that there was a proposal that got a little, it got a little confusing about where it was going, and then the end result is I think the Historical Society is going to be working on that. But where do you stand on the picket bridge?
Well, obviously, I'm a supporter of the United States of America and not separating out our country. So, as far as that goes, I mean, there's no question. I did find some interesting information about when the bridge was established and why it was named for the person it was named and why it was, and why that happened. And I think it would be interesting on the history of things to find out that story as we're looking at whether or not we want to change the name of the bridge. Because I just assumed, I made the assumption myself, that this was something that happened after the Civil War. But the emphasis for why they named the bridge the Picket Bridge, and I'm not going to go through the whole story because sure, I don't want to misrepresent anything, but had to do with what this person did before they went to the Civil War. That was why the bridge was named after him. That might not make any difference now. And right. I personally would be happy to change the name that's more to something that might be more appropriate. But I do think that we have history that we need to listen to understand why. These weren't people that were honoring someone because they were a Confederate soldier.
Right, but he was.
Well,
and,
no,
and
was
also
before, this was before,
well, he,
Stephanie.
No, he was in his life. He was a Confederate soldier.
Right.
And also it wasn't that bridge. It was a different bridge. And so this bridge is not the bridge that he helped build.
Well,
I'm
like
not
to
talking
just
about the bridge that he helped build either.
If I could, I just jump in with a little exposition about what we're actually talking about on the air right
Fair
now.
Fair enough.
Which is that a council member, April Barker, introduced on Monday a proposal to allow the Historical Preservation Committee of Bellingham to look into the history of this, to assemble all the facts and everything for a future presentation for the city of Bellingham so that people can come and they can comment and they can make the observations you're making right now, Stephanie. and but the idea was, we're going to use one of our advisory committees, public advisory committees, to come forward with the facts that Kelly was talking about, the history, all of that, in a meeting, and then City Council at that point can make a determination about what they'd like to do moving forward. But what you say is correct. I mean, this is a man who was stationed here before the Civil War as an engineer. He built a bridge. It's not that bridge. He didn't actually even build the bridge. Mm-hmm. He was just the guy. He was in command of the forces that put together that bridge. The bridge, I just like to say, the bridge is not a monument. The bridge is a bridge. But we can have a discussion, and we will have a discussion.
It still has a name.
It has a name.
And it's named after somebody
correct.
Who was involved in the Confederacy.
Right.
Right.
But it wasn't, it's not, I'd like to just make a distinction that there's a very important conversation going on in this country right now about Civil War monuments, many of which were put in place in the 1920s to make these various statements. This is not a monument. This is a bridge that was built by a guy.
Do you want to change the name, Tim?
I want to hear what the Preservation Committee has to say. Where I'm at on this is I don't think that we should erase the very unfortunate things that have happened in our nation's history. I don't think that that's what we need to do. But we also need to not honor people mm-hmm. that were traitors or whatever they were. But one of the really, and I think it's a nuance, and I think it's a nuance that the community should discuss, was this guy a traitor when he built the bridge? I think he was actually a soldier in the United States Army when he built the bridge. So these are things we can talk about.
Well, and let me just talk a little about the dreaded P word process, because whether it's something I hate, like not supporting our country, or it's something I love, like remembering our history, I think that we, as a society, need to be very careful that we do what our council's doing now and not just start, make a move, you know, go to a meeting and say, we're going to change this. First of all, you don't educate the public on why. You're not giving them the information that will make them appreciate, hopefully, the reason why we'll do it. But secondly, it could be an opposite thing. I mean, we're, you know, the government's here to protect, unfortunately, sometimes the rights of the minority. I mean, and if the minority is something you don't agree with, you're not that excited that sometimes that's happening. But it is here to represent, to protect the rights of the minority. And that means listening before acting, to me. But that doesn't mean we're not going to act.
Okay, so we have just a couple minutes in this half hour. I have not said this. You're listening to Cascadia News Now. This is Mayor Kelly Linville, who is sitting at the table with me, Stephanie Contreras, Tim Johnson, Dave Willingham. Dave, I'm going to call on you to give some history about Pickett, but we're running out of time in this half hour. I do want to ask you, Mayor Kelly, Baltimore just quietly got rid of all of their Confederate monuments overnight. If you wanted to, do you have the power? Does your office have the power to say, I'm changing the name?
I don't know if I do or not, Stephanie. That I'll just be honest with you. I have a lot of respect for, like I say, government and democracy and how we decide things. If I did, I could. You know, if I had the power, I could change that. But I really want us to have the discussion and then make a great decision.
Well, you've made that point. What I'm asking is because people are going to write you letters and the city council letters. So I'm asking a process question. Do you actually have the power if you woke up and said, screw this, I'm changing the
name?
Yeah,
I don't know, and I'd have to get back to you.
Well, it's an important question because if the change makers are our city council, then that's who people who want to get it changed should be focusing on. But if it's something that you do have the authority, even if you want to listen to people, then people can weigh in on both sides directly to you. So,
well, and they also can weigh in directly to me, and I can make a recommendation to the city council. But I think I'll go back to this because you know me. I always say the unpopular thing. I think that I agree with Tim, though. I think that we all need to listen to the conversation and then make the right decision.
And the only thing I wanted to make is what you're asking Kelly Linville to do is not Kelly Linville style, which is she's not an authoritarian who acts independently of the council. She would prefer
I didn't ask her to do it.
No, I understand.
I asked her if she had the power to do it. Right. So let me correct what you said that I did. Right. You are listening to Cascadia News Now. I'm Stephanie Contouris, and I am with Dave Willingham, Mayor Kelly Linville, and Tim Johnson. And you are listening to KMRE 102.3 FM Bellingham and KAVZ 102.5 Deming and Van Zandt. I think it would be good. Dave is our sort of history guy, and I know that you can tell us a little bit more about General Pickett. Would you like to do that at this time?
Well, I'll be quick. George Pickett was really important in the history of the Pacific Northwest. And, you know, he ordered the construction of a bridge. He ordered the construction of Fort Bellingham, of which pieces still remain down Fort Bellingham Road if you head northwest out of town. And he was also the commander on the ground when we almost went to war with Great Britain over a dead pig out on San Juan Island. And
the Pig Wars.
Yeah.
For and those who know what the Pig Wars are.
He lived in a house here, and he took a Native American bride in a way that is, you know, kind of horrific looking back on it. And at the same time, when he had the opportunity, he betrayed his country. And I think it's important that we have these conversations about the people that are important in our history. And I think that it's important that we appreciate them. But at the same time, I don't know if we should name a bridge after him. I think a monument that says he did these things and then he betrayed his country would be just fine. I mean, there's a, you know, statue of Benedict Arnold's boat, you know, in New England. You know, we have to be willing to embrace our entire history if we're going to benefit from it and learn from it. And, you know, I appreciate what you said, Mayor Kelly. It's a minor thing. I don't want to live in a town where the mayor can just change the name of things on a whim.
Well, and I kind of feel the same way because I'm watching this try to happen at the federal level, and I'm not too comfortable with it.
I hear what you're saying, Dave. I'm kind of curious to know if there is a statue that doesn't honor but reviles something. Is it still called a monument?
Absolutely. You know, it's still
like war monuments.
Yeah, it's still a monument if we're not happy about it. I mean, there was protests the other day at statues of Lenin, the few that exist around the country that were smuggled out of this collapsing Soviet Union, and just because there's a statue of it doesn't mean we're honoring this thing. But I think there's an important distinction here. A lot of these Civil War statues that became flashpoints were specifically to honor those people. I want to make sure there's not any confusion there. That was the intent.
We don't have a Bellingham Lenin International Airport, is what I'm saying. And I understand your point, Tim. And Tim and Kelly are the voices of reasoned, tempered discussion. I have to point out that we are all more or less white people of privilege speaking about an issue that impacts other people differently. And impacts people who are the children of slaves and their ancestors are slaves differently. If this was somebody who had built a lovely bridge and a lovely house and then gone off and fought for the Nazis or was a spy for the Nazis, I would feel pretty damn irate about it. And so, yes, I understand you want to look at history. You understand that this person lived here and had a house here and something with an Indian woman that sounds disturbing to me. There's not a lot of history that I know about that. But at the end of the day, we don't have a Ted Bundy airport. We don't have a Ted Bundy bridge. And I think if somebody did something horrific, that person doesn't get places or transportation or roads or airports named after them. And so because you had your well-tempered opinions, I have to make mine equally strongly.
But I don't think that necessarily Tim and I are disagreeing with you.
No, you said I said well-tempered, right. Because you want to have discussion. You want to have more discussion.
We spent a lot of time on this topic.
Wait. You had a lot of discussion about why we have to have the discussion, and I wanted to present my opinion about why I think it needs to go as a different opinion.
I understand that. We spent a lot of time on this. I just want to make something quickly, and it's something that I read today, and I thought it was interesting. I mean, George Washington is a slaveholder, Thomas Jefferson, slaveholder, Madison, slaveholder. Did they do other things beyond the ownership of slaves that make them noteworthy in history? And the interesting thing, I think, about this discussion we're having about Civil War monuments is a lot of these people, like Jefferson Davis, they would not be in history at all, except for their traitorous stance against the United States. Some made contributions that are historic beyond simply that they were traitors to the United States. And I think Dave outlined why somebody like Pickett actually has historical significance in the Pacific Northwest that doesn't exonerate what he did with his life, but it certainly ameliorates some of the discussion that we're going to have about what he did with his life.
And Dave, since you have that history, or if you've researched it, I think that would be great information to share with the city.
Anytime the city needs me to come on and ramble about George Pickett, I am happy to serve.
And as we wrap this up, because we have a lot of things and we want to give Mayor Kelly more time on other things too, but in terms of bringing in voices, I know that there are several groups of people who want to be included, and when I talk about who's at the table and who's not at the table, it's important to me that people whose ancestors and people who are very strongly and personally impacted by the name George Pickett are at that table. The other thing, when I had originally said 20 minutes ago that there were two issues that people see as us being more than token, and the other one is, of course, Sanctuary City, and the council had decided to have the effects of Sanctuary City without the name Sanctuary City, some people feel like that didn't go far enough.
And I understand that, because we were all at the table together.
And so you want to stand with that we should not be a sanctuary city?
Well, I think we are a sanctuary city. We do everything a sanctuary city would do, except for call ourselves one, and that was up to the council.
So that's a council decision that you were not able to weigh in on.
Well, I think I did weigh in, and it isn't that I disagree with what the council did, because this is my I don't know what the word is that you want me to be, but I'm not.
Jay Inslee? Yeah.
Committal.
No.
Non-committal.
It's not non-committal.
Non-imperial.
I am very tempered, because I do believe that my opinions are my opinions. So I don't want to come off as thinking I know best for everyone, because I don't know best for everyone. I certainly think I know morally best. I mean, I think I can do that. But the sanctuary city, I am more interested, like I said, I look at you and I just see a person like me. I'm more interested in what you do than what you call yourself. I am very interested in Stephanie Contouris, champion for civil rights and equity and all those things, but I don't preface your name with that stuff. I look at you and I know what you do and I appreciate what you do. You know I do. I love you.
Aw. But I have love from the mayor.
Well, you have love from the mayor, but the point for me is it more important that I say I'm a sanctuary city and don't do anything about it?
Why can't you have both?
Well, you could have both, but right now we've chosen to do the right thing and not just label it. And for me, as long as we're doing the right thing, I'm okay with that. If we weren't doing the right thing, I wouldn't be okay with that. I feel very clear that in our community, we treat everyone the same.
Sure. And I hear this. So let me just ask, and then we can move on. If we are doing everything about being a sanctuary city, what is wrong with calling ourselves a city? What's the problem? What's the harm in it?
I personally am not This is not my high priority. If I'm going to work on something right now, I'm going to work on homelessness and alternatives to jail. That's my goal. So if the city council would like to change this, I wouldn't stop them. Obviously, I wouldn't stop them from changing it. But it takes up a lot of time to do things that, to me, don't mean as much as the actions we take. And we have always taken, it's been our goal to take the right actions. And I believe, in general, we have done that.
Okay, well, let's move on. People know how to write you, so people know how to reach you if they have more to say about this issue. But we really want to focus also on a couple of things that are really impacting Bellingham. Homelessness is one of them, and the lack of a capital budget is another. So you brought up homelessness. Let's go there. Let's talk about what's happening. I saw somebody on the way here sitting across from City Hall who was obviously in distress and obviously yelling, and I don't know what to do. I mean, I want to be safe, but I also want to go out. I'm not saying that you're a social worker. I'm not saying you can tell me what to do.
You don't have to be a social worker, Stephanie. But what you do is you call 911. That is the universal number that we are using, and now we don't expect the police to be the social worker that shows up, or the community paramedic that shows up, or the crisis intervention person that shows up, but they alert those people to come. We also have the homeless outreach team, and I don't have the number with me right now, but I would love to share that number, because that number also, if you see someone in crisis, you don't have to go through 911. But 911 is the best number to call, because not only is that how you can contact real help for people, it's also how we keep track of incidences that we're having in the city. So you don't not know what to do. You do know what to do.
Well, Kelly, one thing that I'm aware of, and I know you're aware of it because you told me, but that there has been some forward motion with the city in trying to find a low, and I know that you can't talk about the details of it, but you might be able to talk about the generalities of it and the city's continued search for a low barrier shelter. My understanding is that there were essentially five candidates that the city is going to try to present to city council at some future meeting. Is that correct?
That's correct. We had one location that we owned, and two of the port commissioners decided to exercise their option to buy that property. That would have been great, because we would be now focusing on building something, raising the money and building something, rather than not.
I'm going to interrupt because Dave, thank you very much, ran out of the room, got the number of the homelessness outreach team, or the HOT team.
From our engineer.
Thank you, Devlin. It is 360-312-3717. Again, 360-312-3717. I do want to say I was involved with the Citizens Action Group for the Bellingham Police. I know that they're overtaxed, but at the same time, many people who are on the streets are afraid of police, and that the police are there to fight crime, theoretically, and not to be people to help the homeless, and sometimes they can be really intimidating. So the fact that you're saying that they are diverting calls now to a team that is not police-led is probably good for everybody.
But when emergencies happen, Stephanie, I would rather have them come and divert than wait if there's only, I think there's four HOT team members. So, you know,
sure,
there aren't enough resources.
But it's a step in the right direction.
Of course, it's a good thing.
So back to the homeless shelter.
Do you want me to talk about the low barrier shelter?
Because this, as I've reported on, this is a very hard community to place. It's difficult to place them in a neighborhood or in a business center, and so you have finite resources, finite places, and you're moving forward on that. And my understanding was that again that you would that the city council would be presented with the findings of your staff at some future meeting.
Right, and what we have the analysis done now. We were looking at city-owned property, government property. because private property is going to be pretty difficult to use. And we've analyzed the five sites, and we have one that has worked its way to the top. And so if we can get, and it doesn't happen, if it was our site, we'd be moving forward tomorrow. But since it's not, we have to cooperate with partners again.
And you can't tell us yet.
And I can't tell you who the partners are. But having said that, everyone in our community knows that this is a problem, and this is a problem that has gotten worse since I've been mayor. I don't think it's because I was mayor. I'm sorry. I don't think it was because I was mayor. I think it was because the economy and the housing market and the lack of mental health and substance abuse programs and beds.
State funding.
It's just all that will get to the capital budget. But this would be a place where if you saw someone in crisis like you did, Stephanie, and you called 911 or you called the HOT team, there would be a place for the paramedic or the HOT team or the police to take someone so that they could be assessed and not have to sleep out in the sidewalk or the entryway or whatever. And you can't actively use in the shelter, but you don't have to be
dry
or you don't have to be clean. And we'd have an opportunity to put people and services together. Now, since we lost that first opportunity, we're also looking at the list of people that we believe we're trying to place places. And I have a community solutions work group that's doing that, that's identifying beds and identifying what would allow us to use beds we have now. We found out that because we don't have services, we have about 30 beds in the community that are going unused. We're going to do that right away. That was the result of a lunch. I love it when that happens.
Well, I guess one thing that has been shocking, I guess maybe shocking is too strong a word, but I'll use the word shocking, in the discussion of homelessness, is one of the things that's come to light is the precariousness and the relationship between homelessness and housing issues in Bellingham. And so those conversations are sort of going on in parallel in the city of Bellingham, not just homelessness, but people's access to safe, affordable homes. And that was also a topic this week at City Council, where you were sat in on a panel discussion that's ongoing about what was called the missing middle. Maybe you can talk a little bit about that, because I think that it's not directly related to homelessness, but it's certainly a factor that feeds into it.
The City of Bellingham implemented one recommendation from the countywide list of recommendations that was done. I can't remember which year that report was done, and that was a housing levy. But we didn't implement a lot of the, and that was for subsidized housing that we're talking about, but we didn't implement the other recommendations that had to do with affordable housing for everyone. And that was the very first group I put together was, okay, we've done the housing levy. We didn't know at that time that was not going to be enough, but we had done the housing levy. Now let's look at what we can do just for the general public. And we are following through on those recommendations. They're tough because they talk about infill in neighborhoods, and they talk about making our urban villages work, and they talk about different housing types in single-family neighborhoods, none of which are extremely popular with the status quo. But I am so excited that there are some neighborhoods that are looking at doing something differently. One of them is Happy Valley. They stood up to a lot of group pressure to say, we're going to look and see what kind of housing types, not subsidized, this is market-based, that we can build in our neighborhood that will allow more people of different incomes to live with us.
Now, this makes me think of, and maybe it overlaps some, but this makes me think of some candidates. I'm not asking you to weigh in on any candidates, but some candidates this election season have been advocating pretty hard for tiny houses and saying that what we don't need is the shelter that the city has been working on and that we need tiny houses instead.
I think that there's short-term needs and long-term needs. We need more housing for everybody as a long-term need. But right now, if we were going to build tiny houses or get tiny houses, and we have 700 people on a list, we would be telling these people, as we did when we built Francis Place, we're going to have a beautiful, wonderful place for 44 of you to live. Out of 700.
In a couple years.
In 3 years.
Yeah.
And we need shelter for people now. We need the opportunity for them to be connected to services now. We need them to have a place to shower now and wash their clothes and go to the bathroom and store their things. Those are the things that we need right now. And this shelter's not going to happen right away either. So I'm still looking for what are some more low barrier things that we can do now. But it's not an either or. It's a continuum of housing that we need in our community so people aren't on the street. And then we need to work to make the housing more affordable for everybody.
Okay, well, it seems like there's a lot. We've talked about housing before and homelessness on this show, and then there's a whole other issue, and I don't know if we have time to get into it, that came up at the city council about those people who are not homeless who are also trying to find housing. One question I have, though, is, as you say, this is in great part because of Washington State funding and lack of funding and the economy, and you talk about how this is not, I mean, it's under your watch, but it's not because of your actions. Is Linden seeing more homeless? Are Ferndale? I mean, are the cities around us having any of the same problems we're having?
They may be having smaller problems. I've heard, like, on the out on the Lummi Nation's reservation, that they have a very small problem with housing as compared to what is here. But I think if you look typically across any county seat, any largest city in any county, you will find that that is where the services are, so that is where the people come. So the people are not all from Bellingham. They're countywide. And what one of the people that I invited to sit in on this group that we're talking about, this continuum of housing, and maybe what needs we have for our next housing levy and what needs we have for our consolidated plan, which is how we spend our federal money, is getting another community to join with us in a housing levy. Now, I've made an overture to the county because originally this was supposed to be a county initiative and the city took it on. And I've also made overtures to the city of Ferndale. And I've asked Kathy Watson to come and sit in at our meetings if she wants to, and sending her the notes. Because if we have people that can be housed in their own communities without coming to Bellingham, then I think that's well worth the investment of that community for their people too. But this is basically every community. It's the biggest city with the most resources is a magnet for the people.
Absolutely. And we just have a few minutes left. We originally asked you to be on to talk about the fact that we don't have a capital budget. So let's get to the capital budget that we don't have, because I don't really understand all the ways Bellingham might be impacted by no capital budget on the state level.
Well, in a multitude of ways. I was in the legislature for 17 years. I do not believe we never had a capital budget. It's too important both for the infrastructure and the services in your community and the jobs. The best jobs we can create is investing in infrastructure we need, or in this particular case, we're not getting a 32-bed triage center that would have 16 mental health beds and 16 alcohol treatment beds. I mean, that's a big loss.
Feeding back into the issue of homelessness again.
Right. Feeding back into the issue of homelessness. We don't have the housing levy funded. The housing levy, the housing fund at the state level builds a lot of homes. Homes like what we're hoping that will happen on the Alloa site with the Housing Authority. We don't have the Model Toxics Control Act money that helps us clean up our waterfront so we can create jobs and access down there.
So these are programs that are already in place in Bellingham that we just expected to have the funding continue, like the whole Aloha area. It's not like we were holding on to it. It's like in the city of Bellingham is in the process.
These are things that were already approved by the legislature.
That's what
I mean,
saying.
In other words, these are things that the legislature have already agreed to, and I think the amount, in my understanding, for Whatcom County was $80 million, and it's been held up over this battle over rural wells. And so you've got $80 million, you've got hundreds of jobs, you've got things that are needed for municipal governments, Whatcom County, Bellingham.
A battle over rural wells that doesn't have anything to do with the capital budget.
No, absolutely not. But if you ask me, am I surprised that there is horse trading going on? I have to tell you that I'm not.
It's not horse trading at this point. It's kind of more hostage taking, though, right?
Well, okay, we'll say hostage taking then. But the point is, you're right. I always thought it was great to look at every issue separately. And so you look at the capital budget, benefits everybody. And so, of course, you'd do that. We've put billions of dollars, new education dollars, into the operating budget. But the capital budget has the money to build the schools.
So what happens if we never get that money? What will happen to our city?
I'll tell you, I'm an eternal optimist. We will get the money. There's two possible ways right now. Well, three. One is in the 45th district, there is a Senate race for majority of the Senate. If that race changes the Senate from majority Republican to majority Democrat, then they'll come back and probably vote on a capital budget. There is a lot of pressure on Senate Republicans from their communities now that they've been home about what is not being built or cleaned up or whatever in each of their own communities. So they're feeling a bit of pressure, and I think there's starting to be some conversation. If the worst happens, we go back to January, and after 6 months of your community members telling you, I can't get my lower class size because I can't build the classrooms I need. I can't go out on the waterfront because we can't clean it up. We can't get people into treatment because we can't build the triage center. I think that there's going to be a lot of pressure on the elected officials. If they don't do it before January, they're going to do it in January.
Roads and bridges failing. That's the other thing, too, is the capital budget not only is involved with this local funding, but also transportation.
And it's the basic upkeep of things. And these are things that aren't going to get cheaper if we have to wait till that race in King County is decided. We're into the next year, and we've gone through a winter where we have places that need roof fixes. And if you put off a roof fix, that becomes a much bigger fix.
Actually, it'll be decided in November, but that's still not very early. Yeah. No, I'm just saying that right now, they don't need to come back. Legally, they don't need to come back.
Kelly, do you think – let me ask this question. Do you think do you think just the election results alone in November will be enough to sort of flip the issue? I mean, let's assume that in this race in the 25th district, 45th
That's okay.
district, that it flips over and the House, I mean, the Senate is now in control of the legislature. Is that going to be enough to get everybody to surrender on this and come together?
Tim, we're actually going to hold that question because we are out of time. And what's going to happen is I'm going to let you know that you've been listening to Cascadia News Now, which is edited by Dave Willingham, produced by me, Stephanie Contouris. Our engineer is Devlin Sweeney. Thank you so much, with help today from Robert Clark. And today you've been listening to our fabulous Mayor Kelly Linville, Tim Johnson, and Dave Willingham. We are about to go back to regular programming in just a minute. And we're going to talk a little bit longer with Mayor Kelly. And if you want to hear what she has to say to Tim's question, you'll just have to listen to us online.
Not everybody, but most people. After 1994, that changed. And every year, it's gotten worse. And when I mean worse, I mean less cooperation on things that we should be able to solve.
I have to ask you. You may not answer this, but do you feel that it's worse on both sides?
I think that the way that districts are drawn now, they're safe districts for Democrats and they're safe districts for Republicans. And in general, they're very, very, very few swing districts. And so what these people are, the legislators are doing, the people are doing, are representing the constituents in their district. And unfortunately, the district isn't balanced. And that makes it much easier to do something that doesn't make sense to Tim and I.
And you're not just shooting from the hip here. You actually were the top budget writer for the Democrats in your final years in the legislature. So you know what it takes to herd the cats and bring them into a room. Everybody's got the little thing that they need and want for their district. But to bring all that together and then bring that into a package, and I guess the thing that's remarkable here is that all that work was done, and then it just blows up in this fist fight over rural wells.
Yeah, normally, and I'll just be frank, normally there were small things that people would say, I'll vote for the budget if this, I'll vote for the budget if that. There were normally district things.
That give and take sausage making
thing. That thing that you don't want to watch, like sausage, yeah. But this is a big thing. You know, this is a big thing. Not having a capital budget affects our services, our transportation, our utilities, and our economy.
And you talk about increased partisanship, and I think that that's what Dave talks about frequently when he's looking at legislative issues.
Yeah, and it really feels like we've kind of painted ourselves into a corner here where it's just standoff and standoff and standoff. We saw it with the entire operating budget process where the Senate wouldn't even come to the table. They weren't even negotiating for months, and they let everything come down to the wire. And to me, that's really disheartening, and barring the results out of the 45th, do you see any hopeful things on the horizon then?
You know, we're hearing rumblings all over about why we should work together. We should work together. We see some evidence of that at the federal level. We should work together, especially when it comes to health care, which, of course, we all know we should work together. I'm optimistic, except for the fact that we had a thing called the Roadkill Caucus.
Remind us what that was.
The Roadkill Caucus was basically Democrats in swing districts who would work across the aisle, not giving up their Democratic principles, but trying to interest-based solve problems for the whole state. I think every single one of us, I was one of those, every single one of us is gone. Wow. And when we're not here, when we're not there, I think we lost the last three in the last election, when people that are what we used to have is that bell-shaped curve, and the bell in the middle used to solve the problems, and the people on each end, the most conservative, potentially the most liberal, would have reasons why they wouldn't want to support things. But
they brought something to the table, too.
Everyone did. But the majority in the middle would say, okay, we have to move forward for the public. You remember, we're a public institution.
You had to do those compromises that pissed off the far left and the far right.
Absolutely.
And, you know, the interesting thing to me is that one of the things that has caused the blow up is the funding of public schools. And that seems to me to be right in the middle of that bell curve. It's ironic that we have this dysfunction around the funding of public education when that's an issue that hits everybody with a child, you know, and you'd think that there could be some consensus around that. And in fact, there was consensus. They actually did some things, but they had to, you know, had to like eliminate a lot of things to get to that point.
Well, and also, I think at one point there wasn't consensus that we needed to put more money in. I think the big thing that broke the dam was, yes, we have to put more money in. So then, as you both know, or you all know, it's how you pay for it. And there's ways to pay for it that Republicans wanted and ways to pay for it that Democrats wanted. And that was what held them up for so long. They finally agreed we needed to do it, but there wasn't an agreement on how.
So going back to the capital budget and the fact that we don't have one, I hear that you're optimistic that things will likely work out as they often do at the last minute with the other budgets that, that Washington State works on. We who are sitting here kind of overwhelmed by this, a little maybe not paying attention to the legislature, don't really realize what's happening until all of a sudden our schools fall apart or, you know, there's not enough teachers for our kids. What is the best thing for somebody other than voting? What is the best thing for Joe citizen like me to do right now?
Well, you can do what I did. So the first thing I did after session was when we said, okay, it's over, I wrote my representatives that had supported the capital budget, and those are the ones in the House because it came up for a vote, and said, thank you. Thank you for voting for the capital budget. I wrote my senators and said, this is how your district is going to be affected if a capital budget doesn't pass. Mm-hmm. On Monday night, the council decided they wanted to do the same thing, so we're going to recreate the letter and we're both going to sign it. But I would say that people should be letting their legislators know that not having a capital budget, not cleaning up our waterfront, not having classes for our kids, not having mental health and treatment beds, not having our roads put back together, those are all things that are not tolerable.
Well, I hope that the optimism that you have carries us all through, and I hope that people do listen and are swayed by their constituents, and that the redistricting doesn't keep us in this position forever, I have to say. It's been really wonderful having you here, Mayor Kelly. Are there any last words that anybody wants to throw out?
Well, whenever I interview somebody, I always like to ask, what's on your mind, Kelly, and that we haven't talked about that really the public should be on the public's radar?
Well, right now, we're so consumed with housing, whether it's subsidized or non-subsidized, whether it's homeless or working housing. The lost middle?
Missing middle.
Missing middle, right. That's really been consuming my day-to-day work. Other than that, it's looking at jobs, because when we did our community survey, it was homelessness, housing, and jobs. Those were the top three issues, and that's what I talk about every day. And of course, jobs are harder. We have good public sector jobs that we create, but we can't create enough of those for everybody. So we're looking for partnerships, and how do we get the right training? How do we get the right regulations in place? How do we make sure that we're getting the kind of businesses we want? But other than that, I don't do anything, Tim.
Just stay at home and knit, like the dairy princess you are.
Blossom time.
I'm so sorry. Blossom time. I'm not from around here, obviously. You have been listening to Cascadia News Now. Mayor Linville, thank you so much for taking so much time with us and engaging and getting into the issues and getting your hands in there. It was awesome. And thank you, Tim Johnson and Dave Willingham. Special thanks again to Devlin Sweeney, who dealt with everything we threw at him with aplomb. I'm Stephanie Contouris, and you are listening to Cascadia News Now on KAVZ 102.5 in Deming Van Zandt and KMRE 102.3 FM in Bellingham.